We go in, she's like, wait a minute. And all of a sudden, I can hear her voice rising, like, these are the streets on the map. Like, that's it. That's actually it. And that was the tree, right? So we go, I do a quick U-turn, like, pull over. And she's like, do you think anything's there? And all of a sudden, now she's like into it. She's like, this is research. This is why people, this is the rush of like journalism, right?
Welcome to The Art of Fatherhood, a podcast that takes you on the journey of fatherhood. Now here's your host, Art Eddy.
What's going on, everybody? Art Eddy here for another edition of the Art of Fatherhood podcast. I'm very excited to have this gentleman on. We've done Facebook Live shows. We wrote a book together. If you have know anything about this guy, he loves to read, he loves to work out, and he just loves to be a good dad. So I'm glad that I'm having him on the Art of Fatherhood, talking about a lot of great things. His new book about Macho Man. We're gonna have fun with that. John Finkel, how you doing, sir?
I'm great. This is, for long, long, long time listeners, we had like a million downloads as Life of Dad. We had another couple million for lunch break. Like, it's a reunion show in addition to everything else. So it's awesome to be here in our old time slot. I think we used to do 1 p.m. as the two dads at home. We were like, this is the time right before the kids get home, but right after lunch where we have an hour. So it's awesome to be here, man. It's good to see you again.
Yeah, man. It's great to just see like the success you have and the passion you have for books, and you just find like great material, great, subjects, and you write and you put your heart and soul and blood, sweat, and tears in it. We're going to get into that Macho Man book in a second, but of course, got to do the steps, man. We're going to talk about fatherhood. You got 2 great kids. When you found out you were going to be a dad, what was going through your mind, man?
The first time I found out, I was like in shock, only because we were like not, it happened like right away. Like, they say, oh, it might take a year to get, for your wife to get pregnant and all that stuff. So I thought we had some time. We'd even booked a trip to Ireland and England. And like a week after we did that, we found out my wife was pregnant. So I always joke whenever like I'm drinking a Guinness or something, I look at my daughter and I'm like, I could have gone to the Guinness factory, but you came. But the moment was amazing. I think it's like, look, my kids, she's almost 13, right? So now when we first started talking about this stuff, my kids were like 5 and 3. And so the farther away you get from it, the more nostalgic you get for that moment. And I'd like to say it was amazing, but honestly, the first thing was like, really already? I thought we had like 1 more year of no kids, but it was, well, the minute they show up, it's like your whole axis of your whole world changes for the better.
Man, I love that. So Guinness holds a special, or maybe not a special place. Like I said earlier, man, you have a passion for reading. You have a passion for learning. Also, too, if people follow you on social media, you're sweating before 6 and getting in, run, even though you hate to run, you'll swim or you're lifting weights and all that in your garage. You lead by example with all the different things. You're just not a meathead. You're a smart meathead. So talk a little bit about the values you're looking to instill into them, man.
The workout thing, it really compounds, I hate the dad bod thing and like the, I hate all that stuff because really what it means is like, you're just kind of letting yourself get not in, get out of shape so that you can't really enjoy the fullness of being a dad. It doesn't even have to mean that like your kids are into sports. It's great that my daughter is a very, very little bit, but my son is like, kind of what guys like us hope for, like a clone, like, gets up and watches Good Morning Football and like it plays flag football and basketball and baseball and watches WWE. Like, it's like getting to relive, your childhood again. And the beauty of it is of being in shape is like, I can do all this stuff. I mean, I actually on Thursday, we have a nice neighborhood here. I coach a flag football team with a friend of mine. And so we have like 10 kids on the team, and in between our practices, we'll just get the kids out on a field. Like we have a basketball field and park kind of near the house. So we'll just meet there. And instead of just kind of, we're not going to make it like a practice or anything. I quarterback one team and he quarterbacks another. And dude, we played the other night for like 2 hours, and I texted a friend of mine. I was like, look, I'm 46, my son's 11. I've probably thrown like 1,000 balls this week, like, and drenched in sweat, like really getting into it. Like, I probably would have been arm-wise having like, there's no way you can have an 11-year-old. I mean, I guess you can, but 11-year-old at like 26 probably would have been a little bit better for the rotator cuff or the shoulder. But all like joking aside on the meathead workout stuff, the only reason I can throw a ball for 2 hours and scramble and run around with a bunch of 11-year-olds is because I've always prioritized being able to do that. I mean, generations before us dads, they had kids at 23, 24. So by the time the kids, 18, 19, you're 40, it would have been school or if they were whatever in the workforce at 40. We're having kids a little bit later. Like we're, so you kind of have to make an active, proactive effort to extend your prime Because you don't want your kid to, especially if sports matter to you, which for most of our listeners and your kind of show, all the awesome athletes you've had on, I think it does.
Yeah.
And so you don't want to be the dad who's like too tired or says no, or my back hurts, or my arm hurts, or you go out ahead. Like, I try to be like, yes, let's do this. Because, 3, 4, 5 more years, your kids are a little older than mine. They do that stuff with just their friends. And then it's like you're maybe shooting hoops sometimes, right?
Yeah. No. Yeah. No. It's great. I think the relationship you have with your kids, because like you were saying, like, oh, my kids are 16 and 13, and it's funny. Like we were hanging out with my wife's aunt and uncle, and she's like, yeah, 2 more years. She's 18. I was like, oh my God, yeah. But then I thought about it too, because I was like, gotta do these trips. And I was just saying to my wife a couple days ago, where I'm like, we can take trips with them when they're in their 20s if they have a partner or whatever, and
Yeah.
we can all go. And like the idea of like you gotta like have these trips, because we go on vacations, we try, whether they're not big extravagant ones, but like they might just be like, renting a Airbnb in North Carolina, right? But like we try and do something at least once a year. But I
Yeah.
feel like the idea of like, oh, once become a teenager, once they do, like the stereotypes, like I feel like you're a person that does not believe in any of the stereotypes.
No.
And it's just like the relationship you have with your kids is awesome. And one of the things you said too earlier, like this has stuck with me. You were out, I think, in Colorado with the family, or maybe you're doing research on a book, but you were out and you said like one of the things that astonished you was like seeing people in their 70s, maybe 80s, biking, walking, hiking, and all this other stuff. And he's like, when you said that, you're like, they do it because they've been doing it their whole lives and they're used to it. That to me, I mean, I work out Monday through Friday. We'll do some stuff during the weekends too with the family, whether hiking or pickleballing or whatever, or basketball. But like, I want to be there. I want to be the point where like I can still do all the things physically. And whether or not you met, like, I know you didn't be like, I'm gonna, inspire art, but like you said that, I was like, that's a good thing,
No,
man.
I know the exact moment you're writing. We try to do, we live in South Florida, so the heat and humidity, we're summer all year, basically all year round. So in the summer, we try to take a trip to the mountains or just get out into the country, whether it's here. We've been doing the national parks every year, and so last year we did Yellowstone, and there's a couple like springs and things that you go to all throughout there that are, it's really a it's a phenomenal thing. You're in the car 6 or 8 hours a day, but every time you get out, you're walking like 2 hours. You're seeing, all the buffalo and bison. You're seeing bears, and then you're also seeing like these amazing, magnificent natural wonders. And some of them are huge hikes or traipsing. It could be like a 600-foot, 800-foot elevation that takes you all these little things. And the thing that you're talking about was, this is all like, I joke, it's basically like a public, it's almost like a mall for like outside. I mean, people are taking RVs. There's no, it's all free to go there. I mean, you just have to get there, right? So it's the best cross section of America that you can get. It's like, it's free. You just have to drive. And all the lodges are, they're nationally run lodge, like national, park run lodges. So yes, there's kind of some are expensive ones, but basically it is what it is. You don't really have to be super wealthy. You don't have to have an inn. There's no fast pass like Disney. Like, you just go. And when you look at the bottom of some of these long trails, especially at like, when you go see like Old Faithful and there's a 2.5 mile loop, that's where you see like this kind of tough gap. You get there and you see, and I'm just saying it, like the fat dads who are like, you guys go ahead, and I'll be here waiting when you come back. And then you see the grandparents who are like 84, who are like, okay, we'll go, and it's like somehow the other generation ahead of us, there's not that many just like kind of out of commission giant dads. There were so many people who I'd look and I'd tell my wife, but look at that. Like, those grandparents are in their like 80s and they're taking the kids while the dad and mom who, they haven't taken care of themselves. And it is what it is. And I don't want to shame anybody, but like that was just a stark example. Everywhere we went, the benches at the beginning of things were full of people who were out of shape, our age. And then the trails were full of the grandparents who were in shape, doing all this other stuff, right? So there's clearly a thing that happened there. And the thing that it inspired me was like, no matter what happens, and I happen to be a hardcore meathead lifter or whatever, but the baseline goal should be be the grandparent who's like, we got it, and you're taking off with the kids up and down the mountain, or going down Yosemite, or going to Continental Divide if you're going to the mountains, and not be the we'll be on the bench waiting for you. It was just so depressing. It's
No
like,
bench warmers, right?
yeah, no bench warmers. And I'm sure people are listening to this and they're saying screw you or whatever, but like it made me sad. Like, that's a life moment. You're gonna drive all the way out in the middle of nowhere and you're not gonna see all the springs and all the stuff because you just don't want to take care, like you don't want to work
Yeah.
out. Like it seemed like a missed opportunity for me. So anyone listening, I apologize if you're offended, but get off your ass.
Tough Love by John. I love it. Another thing too, like you are very, you know, being a writer, you know, you're very observant and like cultures and like what people's habits are. And there's certain things that your daughter or your son do that remind yourself of, you know, remind you of yourself of like a certain ages or certain things. Or then there's other things that you just put in there that are completely comical. And it's just like, you know, whether they're, you know, stuffing like, you know, action figures in a book bag, just cause like we might need them at school or whatever, you know?
Yeah, yeah,
I
did that.
I love that. And just like the back and forth your kids might have. Talk about something that your kids have taught you about yourself or about life that maybe you didn't know was there until they were there, man.
Yeah, my son has a really funny way of just like cutting me down. And he doesn't do it. Now he's old enough now to be self-aware, but for a while he wasn't. And my best version of it is when he kind of figured out that I was a writer and like, oh, you wrote, like, basically anyone listening, when your kids start to Google, they start to learn about you basically.
Yep.
So my kids will be like, Dad, we Googled you in class. We're just Googling all the parents and you wrote, I didn't know you wrote these books. And I'm like, you see them everywhere, but like, you know, they're kids, they don't care.
Yeah.
And then my son came home one day and he was like, you wrote that? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, how long did it take you? And I was like, oh, you know, like a year and a half and all this research and all this stuff. And he's like, well, how long does it take to read? And I was like, Dad. And he's like, why don't you just make like a video of it? And I was like, well, it's a book. People want to read the books. And he's like, I mean, that's what YouTube's for. And I was like, are you just killing my whole industry? Like, what are you doing?
That's how newspapers are dead. It's because you're son.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, what are you doing, man?
No, it's funny. Like you're spot on with the you know, Googling. Like my oldest was hanging out with one of her friends and they were like, just, I think at school, and they were Googling something. They're like, your dad interviewed Danny Trejo. He's awesome. Like, how, like, we love Danny Trejo. And then like the parents like, yeah, I heard you interviewed one of our favorite movie stars. I was like, yeah, it's crazy. Like that's the thing now. And you're a type of, you know, dad that's not gonna be like, hey, like you, like at breakfast you throw down like your complete library of all your books, like read these tomorrow and tell me what you think, right? I wrote. So I love the fact that you got that from there. You know, for new dads or for just dads in general, dad hack or piece of advice, what would you offer to them?
It's kind of what I was hitting on before. It's like maintain your energy to match your kids' energy. And yeah, like we mentioned earlier, like, you know, when your kids are teens, it's not so much that you can't do stuff. It's just they're interested. I've seen it with my daughter. Like she wants the piece of the pie where she wants to spend with you shrinks because now her friends matter more. And then she's actually got more activities at school and more responsibilities. And it's just, it isn't that you can't, it's just maybe you were 100% for sure for many, many years. And it's probably 50-50 now. And even when they're home, that you know, moody and this, it's times where you're like, we actually could hang out, but you go do your, you have, I don't know what's going on in your little hormonal brain, but you go do your own thing and get all that kind of stuff. But so I never, you know, if your kid asks to play catch or go for a walk or do a puzzle, just have the energy to do it. My biggest piece of advice is, it, you know, it does go by fast, but forget about that. Just while they're living in your house, say yes to just everything. If it means you have to stay up a little later because your kid wanted to do, you know, a project with you, or even if they wanted to play NBA 2K, it doesn't matter. That time will be finite. Your 26-year-old's probably not gonna be living in your house asking you to play 2K at, you know, 8 o'clock. It wouldn't be bad, but you know, you kind of don't want that. So, you know, it's just those, there's a lot of people who, and you see it, I'm sure you know guys who are just, they're always busy. They're on their phone. They're always doing, actually, that's the other, put your phone away. That's like the biggest one that I've had to work on. And I've been pretty good at it. Most nights, from dinner till they go to bed, I just put it in my closet and shut the door. I literally have to take it off me. I just put it in a drawer in my closet and put it away. Because you'll have something, you'll post a show, I'm sure. And you're like, oh, who liked it? Who did this? And you just naturally take it out and thumb through it and take it out and thumb through it.
Yeah.
And I do it too. So my first thing that I do when, once we're starting around dinner, and look, we don't have perfect family dinners. We got Taekwondo, we got this, we got that. But whenever we're kind of all home together, I make a point of just at least for an hour, sometimes more, but I put it out there. And then until they're in bed or doing their own thing, I try to take it out. So it'd be, those are the two things I think.
Nice, man. Great, great dad hacks right there. And again, congrats on your latest book, Macho Man, The Untamed, Unbelievable Life of Randy Savage. You have a really great eye on picking out subjects that, you know, people are interested in and, you know, maybe haven't heard the full story. Talk about what inspired you to write a book on Macho.
Yeah, I grew up like just loving WWE or WWF back then and wrestling. And like there's biographies that as a writer, I think if you do nonfiction books, that you just want to tackle. And there had never been a Macho Man biography. And you know, it was one of those where I know I'm self-aware enough. I think most writers are like, am I good enough to do this yet? Right. It's like writing is like any other discipline. Like you're not going to go fight a black belt when you got your white belt the first day, right? So I wasn't going to tackle a book like this first or second. But when I finally got to a place in my career now where I felt confident and comfortable that I could do the research and I know how to get this stuff done and find the interviews and kind of my detective chops on doing all that, I was like geeked up to do it. And then I always found it fascinating that he kind of had like a full baseball attempted career all the way through the minors as a different human being named Randy Poffo, and then turned into Randy Savage, who turned into the Macho Man that we grew up watching and being a fan of. So I like people who reinvent themselves. I like to write books on what I call one of ones, like, you know, someone like Charlie Ward, who's, you know, Heisman Trophy, National Championship, point guard for the Knicks in the finals, right? Like people who do things that no one else has done. And I think Macho fits that category.
Nice, man. And you and I both have grew up in the WWF slash WWE world. We saw, like, WrestleMania, there were the cartoon shows, there were obviously the action figures, and then WrestleMania. And as a kid, when you're in this, like, 80s and early 90s, you're not really focusing on the news. You're not checking out, like, if someone died, unless it was a huge wrestler that, like, someone passed, right? And then you're like, oh my gosh, this person passed. But if it was maybe a wrestler that you kind of appreciated and kind of knew, maybe you didn't hear all the news or whatever.
Right.
But as we grow up, as we become adults, man, we realize, man, wrestlers, they live their life, at full acceleration. And when you live your life at full acceleration, not all the times, but, like, there are times
Yeah.
where, people don't know how to manage all of that. In that world, I'm guessing, Macho Man probably saw, Randy saw all the different things that was happening. While you were researching, was he kind of aware of his surroundings and just the shelf life that maybe people have if they're in the wrestling game?
Oh yeah, I mean, his father, Angelo Poffo, was a pretty well-known wrestler throughout the what they used to call the territories, so out through Chicago and all that area, Midwest. Angelo Poffo was a heel. He was like a mid-level heel against this guy Bronco Lubitsch. So he was like the version of the he was not the headliner, but he was the guy who would come in and get, you know, let the headliner kind of beat up on him all the time. And so Randy would grow up, you know, traveling a ton with his dad. The funniest moments of research and even talking to Lanny Poffo, who passed away, but I did early on in the book, who's Randy's brother, is, you know, they would go in these arenas and they'd drive to these, you know, packed houses of, you know, back then, you know, maybe they'd play like an arboretum, an armorarium or something like that, where it's 10,000 or 5,000 or even a big high school gym, 12,000 or something, or 1,200. And the whole time Angela would be telling, you know, 8-year-old Lanny and 10-year-old, you know, Randy, like, listen, when they boo me, it's good. I'm a bad guy. My job is to get them to boo me. So don't get upset because, you know, the mom says in some interviews, everybody's passed away. So these are all from some interviews I found in old newspaper clippings and all that. But, you know, the kids would get upset. Imagine like your daughters are 6 and 8 and you enter an arena and they're like, oh, you suck, Art, you suck. And they'd be like, what's wrong? Why do they hate my dad? Right. And so that was them. That he had to say, like, booing me is good, like cheering me is bad. Me getting beat is good. Like me, them, the more they yell at, point fingers at me and scream at me, the better my job is. Like it was really confusing. And so that they had to understand. And then to your the first part of your question, like the lifestyle, they did it. I mean, until they were almost in like fourth grade, they traveled with their parents to do everything. And so Randy definitely knew what was, you know, what he was in for. Coming from minor league baseball, it's not much better. It's, you know, buses and motels and traveling, making no money and living off of, you know, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and fast food everywhere you go. But the wrestling life is especially in the 70s, an extremely hard life to crack into. I mean, you're performing sometimes, there's nights where they would describe like performing 3 nights, you know, 3 shows in a night from like 4, 6, and 10, you know, 4 o'clock at some fair in Des Plaines, Iowa, and, you know, then 6:30 somewhere in like Decatur. And then, like, you know, another one in here, and I just like DuPont and all these names of towns in the Midwest that I'm flubbing right now. But like, they would just do with these loops, right? They'd go out and do a 9-hour loop and hit 3 shows and, you know, get into a hotel at 2 a.m., get up the next day to drive another loop. And it'd be 4 of them in an old car staying in one room, you know, 4'6", 230-pound dudes sharing two double beds in a hotel. Like, it's a tough, tough life. Lanny joked and said, like, you know, the only thing, you know, there's times where they'd be behind, and like the only thing they'd eat that day, they would just stop at like a grocery store and they'd run in and get like two loaves of bread and 2 pounds of bologna and just keep driving. And he goes, you can imagine what that car smelled like by the time we got to wherever we were going.
I thought you were gonna say they just got beef jerky. You know, you make a good point too about just like the idea of like telling your kids that they come to your events, like they're gonna boo me. This is what's supposed to happen. We all saw whether the alliances he had, you know, Randy in the ring, outside of the ring, the stories that they were kind of like trying to, you know, portray. Who were his really good friends in the wrestling world that he could rely on like 24/7?
So the answer is probably none, because he kept everybody at a bit of a distance. The two guys that he hung out with, Hacksaw Jim Duggan. He liked Hacksaw. He used to call him Hacker. Hey, Hacker. Hacksaw, I talked to for a couple times. He was great. He was like, he used to tell me these stories when he first got called up. Randy was like, just, it was right after WrestleMania 3. So Randy was like a pretty big name, but kind of not sure. They didn't know what to do with him just yet, because he had the title, lost it to Steamboat and all that. And he's like, I didn't know, you know, he's like, I'm Hacksaw Jim Duggan, but like after the match, I'm just Jim Duggan. He's like, I didn't know at the time that like Macho Man is Macho Man all the time. So like one of the first times, you know, we'd finish somewhere and we were trying to hit like a McDonald's before we left. And I was just kind of making small talk, like, you know, good match tonight, you know, basic work things that you'd say. And he's like, we get in line. And he was just kind of like mumbling to Hacksaw, and the lady's like, oh, what'd you like? And he's like, oh yeah, I'm a Big Mac, and give me the double fry. And he's like, wait, he's like, he told his wife was with him, and he's like, he's not stopped, like, he doesn't have to do this at 11. He thought he was so dedicated to the performance and character that he was doing it for the 11:30 p.m. cashier at McDonald's. He's like, he doesn't have to do that, they probably don't know who he is. And then he realized it actually never goes off. So that was one of his buddies. And then he kind of had guys that he relied on differently. There was a time where he and Hulk were inseparable, before when real life collided with, you know, the storyline. But in between there, they were friendly. They stayed a lot at each other's houses. They worked out together in Tampa. They did guest spots on Baywatch and other shows together. And then like guys like Paul Roma, who some people don't probably remember, but he was a pretty good mid-card guy for a while. They worked out together a lot, so like he relied on him for like where's the best gyms in town. So he had little kind of single purpose stuff, but he would probably say not many, but a lot of guys, like even Sting had, you know, says he had a great relationship with him, and Diamond Dallas Page later said he had a great relationship with him. So I think Macho played it real close to the vest, but some of the guys did get in a little bit. He and Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff had a pretty good relationship, but they were all distant because, you know, he always had Elizabeth with him, so he didn't go out with the boys very often. He kind of always stayed back. But yeah, there wasn't one dude, but for a while it was kind of a mix of those guys for different purposes.
Gotcha, man. Thanks for sharing that. Two more questions before we finish off with the father quick five. I think when our parents' generation and our grandparents' generation, where the icons or the people, the names, the, you know, the celebrities or just the movers and shakers, they just had one thing, right? And they just excelled at it. They weren't out venturing and having this or that. Like, if you're a wrestler, that's it. You're not getting into acting. You're not going to get into whatever other things may be, like the spokesperson. But as are, and even now today, like, people are just multifaceted now. They're trying to like go out to every branch. Like, you see, like, athletes have their own podcasts and like their own entertainments, like, you know, businesses and all that. I think Randy was like the first person to get outside of wrestling. You know, he was in Spider-Man, of course, Slim Jim, all of those different things. While you're researching and seeing, even talking to your kids too, and maybe it might be a little bit skewed because you guys are into wrestling, but through your research, do you kind of find that people would notice Randy for different things other than wrestling?
Randy was more famous for Slim Jim almost than anything else towards the end. The reason like my parents' generation, or, you know, would even know who he is mo you know, again, we watched wrestling, so we knew. But the reason maybe like some of my friends' parents who didn't or whatever knew who he was is because of Slim Jim. And Slim Jim poured so much money into that campaign. There was a Slim Jim car that at the time he used to go to NASCAR, which kind of, you know, NASCAR and WWE have always had like overlapping audiences. And so that was like huge for them. They used to bring him to football games as like a, you know, not a mascot per se, but like as a spokesperson. And so, yeah, he was the one of the first guys to really embrace that stuff from the wrestling side. I mean, they all had licensable stuff. I mean, Hogan had hundreds of licenses and dolls and wallets and lunchboxes. So that wasn't a new, even the cartoon thing wasn't super new. The craziest thing that I learned about Macho was before Slim Jim and all that kind of stuff, when he took the belt off of Hogan, at WWF at the time had a huge deal about to launch with Mountain Dew. They were doing something called the Slam of the Night. I don't even remember it. I was probably too young, but it was like, and so they actually made Macho the face of Mountain Dew in the Slam of the Night for about a year and a half, way before the Slim Jim thing was. He was doing all the Mountain Dew sponsorships and all this stuff. So he got it. His dad had a pretty strong business sense. He was really smart. He was honor society, like sharp poker player, like understood business, was probably one of the only guys who did not live paycheck to paycheck. Like he had his money put away by the time he made his title run and everything. He didn't need it. I mean, financially, he didn't need it anymore. So he was doing really, really well. And watching him, you know, reading as I'm researching and watching go through, yeah, the multifaceted businessman that he became was amazing. And with the first thing you said, like, I watched researching this, all the WrestleManias and all the old Saturday Night Events on YouTube with my son, who like didn't know, you know, he knew him nothing from a meme of like the ooh yeah, like that one that they do. That's it. And he got to like, I condensed like 4 years of my childhood into like 3 months of, you know, watching WWE streaming. But he got so into it. And the coolest part was like watching him with me watch the Steamboat match in. He'd watch the other stuff in order. So I didn't tell him who won. Like it was like watching it as if I could watch myself watch it. Like he didn't know, you know, he knows and that he knew a little more because he was, you know, he watches like I do SmackDown and stuff. So he knows it's picked and, you know, selected who wins. He knows it's not totally like, oh my God, he lost. But like just the live experience of going through that and Ric Flair at WrestleMania and then all the matches with Ultimate Warrior, like he just at the edge of his seat at the perfect age for it. So it's been the most fun in terms of all the books I've written. From a dad perspective, I've really been able to like include my kids in this one the best.
All right, yeah. So I'm going to tie this up. My last question before the Father Quick Five. It's going to tie in Fatherhood and your book, man. Like for people listening to this, they can hear the care and the research you put in. You had an awesome social media post about when you were doing research, you took your daughter for a road trip on that, and it was amazing, man. Talk a little bit about the importance of taking road trips and showing your kids the work that you're putting in. So they can kind of follow your work ethic. Because you, again, we lead by example, not just by our words, but by our actions.
Yeah, that one, it's like I really have to kind of, I think I would have done it anyway. It's the kind of relationship I have with my kids and wanted to do that. But when I grew up, my dad worked for Toys R Us and he was like a general manager in New England. So he was in charge of a lot of stores. And like once a month, he used to have to do, well, he did them every weekend, but he didn't take us every weekend. But once a month, he would rotate. 1 weekend I would go and 1 weekend my brother would go. And he made a huge thing of it. We would leave early in the morning, go to Dunkin' and get a thing of Munchkins. And I'm sure whatever I drank, and we would visit like 12 stores with him. And we just spent the day like, you know, I was 8. I mean, once I was older, I probably didn't want to do it, but 6, 7, 8, 9. And we would just go store to store, and they would, oh, Harvey, they would see him. And I'd know, and they knew me. Oh, John, I got you. Like it was just being in his world. And so, you know, when he had to travel and do things, I had a nice sense of dad's working in my head meant something. Okay, I know that guy. Like he'd be like, oh, I'm at the store. Remember Rich? You met him. He did. Oh, I do know that guy. Like, it just connects that, you know, for generations, it's like dad's at work. It's like, okay, comes home, he's home. What do you do? I'm working. Like, great conversation, dad. Like now with our generation of dad, where everything's a little bit more emotional and sharing, we want our kids to know and connect. How was school? Not just how was school, but like, how's this teacher? Who'd you sit with at lunch? Like, no one asked me that. No one asked you that. Like we do, right? Like, how was that class like? And how did that homework assignment go? And we just have more involvement, this generation of dads. And so when I have to go on these research trips, and luckily we live in Florida. So, you know, Randy spent a lot of his life, especially the last maybe third half of his life in Tampa. So I was like, and one of the main things I wanted to visit was Randy passed away. For those who don't know, he had a heart attack while driving and like swerved across the street. His wife actually saved a lot of people's lives. She reached over and turned them out of traffic, but they came to rest slamming into a tree on this guy's property, like going the wrong way. I mean, by the police report, by interviewing everybody, like she really did saved like her car from slamming into like ongoing traffic. Like she did an amazing, like heroic job getting over his 240-pound body to like pull the wheel. She lived with some, you know, stitches and some minor injuries, and but he had already he basically died on the spot from a massive coronary heart attack. Anyway, the tree I had heard, just there's nothing online, there's nothing anywhere, had become like a de facto memorial for Macho Man. 12 years after he died, 13 years after he died. So I tell my daughter, we're going to take a road trip. We're going to go. You know, they see me at my computer. They see you at your computer. They don't know what the hell we're doing. Like, they don't read my drafts. They see me at my desk with 50 newspaper clippings spread out and a stack of research books this high. You know, dad's writing. It means nothing. So I go up there. We visit. Macho had like a cool 1 acre property, like a secluded house that he had. We found his condo that he lived in. We went to Hulk Hogan's restaurant hangout that has a ton of memorabilia and stuff like that. But the kind of the cornerstone of the piece was to see this. And if I could, I didn't know, again, there was no this stuff out, but interview maybe somebody who lived around there. It was happened right in front of a church. So I was going to go in and see if maybe was anyone happened to be who's here around who saw it, you know, want to get some journalism, like first person research. Right. And so the whole time my daughter's like, why are we going to see a tree? And I'm like, you have to understand what he means. And she's like, people really care. Like, and you know, the whole wall, right up, she's listening to Taylor Swift and her music. And then as we're getting close, she's like, do you even know if anything's like there? Like, what if it's just a tree? And I'm like, it could be. I honestly have no idea. I think I found the address through some like internet sleuthing and like old police reports of where the accident happened. So I had like a Google satellite Earth picture of like where I thought it was. And so we're driving and my daughter's like, this would be so lame if nothing's there. And I'm like, you don't understand like how important he was. Like, I actually think there might be. So, you know, mystery, it was cool. So we finally get there. It's a 4.5 hour ride. My cousin lives there. So we stopped and said hi, you know, for lunch and stuff. We go in. I'm like, I think that's the tree. My daughter had the picture. So she was like my co-pilot. We go in. She's like, wait a minute. And all of a sudden I can hear her voice rising. Like, these are the streets on the map. Like, that's it. That's actually it. And that was the tree, right? So we go, I quick U-turn, like pull over. And she's like, do you think anything's there? And all of a sudden now she's like into it. She's like, this is research. This is why people, this is the rush of like journalism, right? So we park, we get out, and she's like, oh my God, Dad. She starts running out there. At the base of the tree, there's a bunch of Macho Man figurines. There's like Slim Jim's thumbtack all around the tree. There's purple tassel all around it. I guess every year on his on the anniversary of his death and so, you know, WrestleMania and some other dates, like local people go up and they slap sunglasses stickers on the tree. Like, it was clearly a decorated Macho Man tree. And she was like jumping up and down, like, oh my God, so many people care. This is amazing. Like, how many people are coming up? And so as we're going, I see a guy, there's one house on the property, pretty far off the sidewalk. And he's just like gardening outside. I was like, let's go talk to this guy. Maybe he knows, like, maybe he lived here when, you know, this happened. And she's like, no, you can't go talk to people. Like, this is the job. Like, let's go. And she's like, well, I don't want to come. Like, I'm like, this is what I do. You want to see what I do? This is what I do.
Yeah.
So she walked with me and I said, hey, how you doing? He's like, I noticed you looking at that tree there. And I go, yeah, I'm writing a book. I explained everything I was doing about Macho Man. He goes, that was a crazy day. And I was like, you were home? And he goes, I was right here. And he proceeded to tell us the story. And my daughter was just like captivated by this. And I'm taking notes. I get my notebook out and I'm doing all this thing. I take pictures of him and the whole thing. And I get his name down and everything for accuracy. And she's like, I can't believe he was here. So he saw the accident. Oh my gosh, so you get to put that story in your book. And like it all clicked on why we did the whole trip. And it was just magical.
Yeah. Love that, man. Yeah. It's just, that just is like fatherhood in an awesome, like gift box, right? Where you just like, right. Said like, yeah, I'm working. But then like the more questions they ask and yeah, that's why I'm
where are
so
we going next?
Talking about, man.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really cool. And then, you know, we had a couple other stops to make, but now she's into it, right? She's looking at my research. We should go here. Did you try to do this? And have you talked to this person? And I'm like, yeah, it's all here. And I'm showing her the interview. So it was just one of those moments where I could truly share what I did in real time. And I don't know what matters what you do as your job. I mean, I'm sure people, there's, you know, stuff where it's like, oh, I do accounting and my daughter's going to sit. But yeah. But for whatever it is, when they can connect what you spend your time on, and we're creative people, so it's probably a little bit more exciting when you're like, this is the interview. I know you've had your daughters in and, you know, you've talked about movies and stuff where you've brought her into like your world and done podcasts together and things, so you get it. So we have a little bit more of an ability, I think, than maybe somebody who has sort of a more office cubicle-y job to do it.
Yeah.
But do it, because that moment when they get it and they look at you like, oh, this is how you do what you do, and this is why you do it, because it's fun and people share their stories, and now people are going to read this and no one knows this. She's like, did anybody talk to him? I'm like, I have not seen an interview with this guy. I've checked every, like, this might be the only interview he's ever done about this. And it's going to be in the book. And then when I got the first copy, I showed her, and she's like, "Right, that was the guy. Did you put in this part? Did you put in this part?" And I'm like, "Yeah, my little fact checker. This is great."
Oh, I love it, man. Thank you very much for sharing that story. I really appreciate it, especially for this podcast, man. All right, we're gonna finish off with Father Quick Five. Favorite family movie? Have one.
Uncle Buck.
Well done.
We watched it maybe two Christmases ago, and that's just the year-round, like, let's, and now we probably just go to my, because you can just go to scenes now. So if that's what these kids do now. I mean, they're not gonna sit through it all, but there's about six scenes: the pancake scene, the grilling scene, Macaulay Culkin, like the bowling scene. Like we just roll. We can do, like, I think the Finkel family can do like a 19 or 22-minute Uncle Buck, and it's perfect.
Nice. It's like the Cliff Note movie version. Love it. And I know you the different, especially with your oldest, she's like probably listening to her own thing, but is there a song, usually I'll say like, favorite genre of music or artist you couldn't wait to introduce your kids to. But for you guys, is there some, kind of with the research, maybe you guys on the trip, maybe you kind of found a song that, she likes that you kind of were digging now, or vice versa. So is there a song that you showed them that they dig, or is there a song that, your kids show you and you're like, "Oh, this is actually pretty good."
My son does this all the time with Madden. Whatever the soundtracks are on Madden, he'll be like, he I literally have a I have a playlist on my phone called like Grant's Madden playlist or whatever. And like, dude, it's awesome. I'll be like, I never heard that song. Like that's a sick song. And I don't even know the name. I'm at the age where I don't know the name of the rapper or the hip hop guy, but I still like rap and hip hop. But I like the song. It has maybe like, you're at the age too where I'll be like, that guy sounds like Redman. And he's like, I don't know who that is, but it's this guy. And I'm like, okay, he's doing a guy who we used to like, a version of him downstream. So it's that. But for a song that like we all like, I'll tell you right now, we're in WrestleMania season, and even my daughter, who will dip in and out of watching Cody Rhodes, oh, entrance music, Kingdom, I Am My King. Like I can just crank that up, and my wife probably sick of it, but the three of us still dig it, and it's like. Big Cody Rhodes fans in our house, and really hoping that he can get that belt this year at WrestleMania. But that song, dude, I'll share with you. I have a WWE workout playlist that is the perfect. It's 28 minutes. It takes me through every time I run a 5K. That's the exact time it takes me to
Oh,
run,
nice.
and it's like Hulk Hogan, Real American, Randy Orton voices. Like then it goes Cody. Like it just keeps pumping you up higher and higher and higher, and then it ends.
Nice, man. Love it. Wouldn't expect anything less from you. So describe the, I mean, you go on a lot of cool vacations, but if you had the perfect vacation, and if not, what would the perfect vacation be for you?
I love, as I mentioned earlier, we do the mountain thing a lot because, we have the luxury to go to the beach all the time. We're about 20 minutes from the beach. The weather's always nice here. So I really, really like the getting out into the woods. And we do it every summer since we moved here, like a long, like 8, 9 days, just out in the mountains, hiking and all. Now, I wouldn't say that's like my perfect vacation because I do like to relax and just chill out and just by the beach and stuff like that. But for the age they are now, it's pretty great. There's no devices, thankfully. Like you don't have to worry about it because there's no service most of the time you're out there. So it's like, we're not even being the bad guys. There's nothing to do. We just have to, do what we do, download songs and have music, but like nothing else. So I love those. But my favorite is we're going skiing at spring break. Like that, I actually, because we live in Florida, I grew up in the Northeast. I love to ski. My perfect year of weather is like 11 months and 3 weeks of beautiful 80 degrees and sunny like it is now, and then 1 week of skiing, which is what I get to do.
Nice, man. It's funny. Growing up, you grew up in New England, me too. I still miss the days. Like right now, this morning in North Carolina, it was like 50 or 40 degrees. It was perfect. I said to myself, like, if it was always like this, I'd be happy. And my wife's like, no, you wouldn't. I'm like, yes, I would. My
I
kids
like it a
are
little
back
warmer because I do like to swim outside. I like the ocean swims, but like for my version of that, I'd be like, again, perfect to everybody. Like 72, sunny. I'm cruising. I don't need wet. I don't need rain. I don't need 40, 30, 20. I don't need any of that. But I love to ski. So when we can just fly in and do like 4 days of skiing and fly home, it's the most perfect trip ever.
Nice. All right. And there's probably so many, but you don't have to name the most interesting one, but favorite Macho Man fact that you found while researching was.
Let's see here. All right, I'm gonna give you a second. Yeah, let me tell you something, Art of Fatherhood. The number one fact that I learned being Macho Man research is that when the macho man bought a house, the macho man didn't look at property values. No, the macho man didn't look at closeness to schools or shops. The macho man looked at one thing and one thing only. All right, how close are we to a gym?
That is amazing. And again, you'd probably, you know, think that like that would be Macho Man's thing. Like, all right, cool. Love it, man. And again, that's probably too, you mentioned he's really good with his money, where maybe, yeah, you know, for him, maybe like creating a home gym or something like that. But then he was like, why do all that? Because you're going to a gym and they'll always upgrade the equipment.
He used to, because of his crazy schedule, he literally did this. When he would look at an area to live because of flights and whatever, he wanted to make sure the gym was open hours that he needed, but he also wanted a relationship with the manager so that if he needed extra hours, maybe they'd give him a key and all that stuff. So he would actually go, and like you or I with families would be like, oh, this is a nice school district, or it looks like they have some nice shopping downtown. And oh, the property values here seem to be rising because they're putting in a nice, you know, park over here. He went to the closest gym and was like, let me speak to your manager, you know, and be like, here's who I am. Here's my schedule. Like, can I lift at 11? All right, let's get a couple. Who trains here? He would get like two or three workouts in to see how he liked the vibe. And only then would he look for an apartment or a condo or a house around the gym.
So it's funny you mentioned that. Like when I was living in New Hampshire at the time, my buddy and I were working out in Manchester and Triple H was working out there. I was just like, oh my God. I go, hey, Brian, go ask him if he can spot you.
I'm not doing you that. Got a minute for these 35-pound dumbbells, Hunter Holmes?
Awesome, man. Thanks for sharing that. And lastly, top three words you hope your kids would use to describe you as a dad, what would you want them to be?
Loving, fun, and funny. I think that works. I mean, if they know you love, you know, if your kids know that you love them no matter what, and that you're fun to be around, and they want to be around you, and you can make them laugh, like, did a pretty solid job, I think.
Awesome, man. Great three words right there. People, make sure you, if you haven't done it already, follow John on Instagram and Twitter at John_Fingal. Pick up his latest book on Macho Man. Pick it up wherever, and also go to johnfingal.com for more on his books, and also pick up and subscribe to his newsletter. A lot of great things. He'll tell you how to work out in the best possible way, you know, from time management skills. And then also too, if you want to read a new book, he's got plenty of there to do that. So John,
and biceps, baby, sign up.
Really appreciate again, the time, and I love the work ethic you have. And it's great. You're a role model for your kids, but I wish you guys continued success, sir.
Thanks, man. It's always good to be back.
Thanks for checking out this week's edition of the Art of Fatherhood podcast. Please rate, subscribe, and review wherever you listen to podcasts. And also go to artoffatherhood.net. You can have a chance to check out some great articles like the weekly Dad's Doing It Right column, the Collector of the Week, and many more. Plus, you have a chance to win some very cool prizes like video games, collectibles, all that good stuff. Go to artoffatherhood.net. And please make sure you rate, subscribe, and review wherever you listen to podcasts, because I'll greatly appreciate it to get the word out on the Art of Fatherhood podcast. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the Art of Fatherhood podcast. Leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts and go to artoffatherhood.net.